Okay, this is an interview with Stanley Gressick for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program by Doug Sulhanic at Mr. Gressick's home on Monday, May the 20th, 1985 at 6 o'clock p.m. Okay, tell us something about your parents and family and what you remember most about them.
Well, originally I'm from Chicago. I lived in Chicago for 25 years. I'm the only child. And my father, my stepfather, actually, he come from Poland. And my first father, he died in the mines in Pennsylvania. And then the whole Gressick family moved to Chicago when I was 5 years old. From there, I was raised in Chicago until I went to high school, only 6 months, and then I quit and went to work. And I worked until Pearl Harbor come. In 1941. I tried to join the Navy before I was 17. That was in May, but then I tried to join in February, but they wouldn't take me because they said I was too young. I tried again in May, and they told me I'd have to wait 2 more months. So I joined again in August, and they took me in August 42.
42. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about your childhood most? Anything sticking in your mind?
I'm more of a silent, what you call a silent childhood. I mean, I was more of a lonely guy. I mean, I was alone. I played with the kids a lot, but I never was in for sports, so I hung around the house, that's all.
You grew up in Chicago?
I was, yeah.
Outside of the city or in the
city? Right in the city of what they used to call the Polish district.
Okay. How about the Depression? What do you remember most about the
Depression? I remember a lot of people were really starving, and because they weren't working. But my father was one of the lucky ones. My stepfather was one of the lucky ones. He was working for Swift Company in Chicago. That's a meat packing plant. And that's why I never remember having a hard time. Mm-hmm. But everybody around the neighborhood, there were a lot of people were laid off and during the Depression, and they couldn't eat or nothing, you know. That's all I remember.
How about the ethnic part, growing up in a Polish neighborhood? Do you think that was good for you? Or
it was. It certainly was, especially when I was in the service. But I always looked for a Polish district or a Polish settlement. I don't care where I went to. This is going ahead, but I found even a Polish district in Shanghai, China, right after World War II ended. And I enjoyed myself wherever there was any Polish people. They treated me like one of their own.
What about your Polish background?
I went to a Polish school. Actually, I had studied American history in Poland, Polish. Adding and subtracting in Polish, reading and writing Polish. When I went to a grocery store, I had to order whatever there was my mother wanted me to get in Polish, because that's all that we talked most of the time. I had broken English when I was 17 when I went in the Navy, and then one lieutenant on board the ship, he taught me English sentences and words and stuff, and then I picked it up.
Was there a lot centered around the church? The fact that you were Polish, was there in the
That was a Polish national, Roman Catholic Church, St. Mary's of the Angels. And that was in Chicago, right on the north side of Chicago.
Was there a lot of activities? Do you remember were your folks real Catholic?
Yes, my mother was. I was. I still am once in a while, but not like I used to be. My mother used to go to church at least 3 times a week. And she'd make me go with her during Lent to go to the Way to the Cross at a Catholic church, at a Polish Catholic church, about from here to Mount Jackson, which is 3 miles. Mm-hmm. And we used to walk it there and come back from the Way of the Cross. And that's it.
What about when you went to school? Can you remember what you said you went in a Polish school? Was there did you know what it was like that other kids went through in a regular school in Chicago? Did you feel as if you were getting as good an education, or were you held back because you were, you think you were Polish, or?
No, this is strictly, most of the kids that went there, they were either of Polish extraction, which is they were Polish Jews, or Russian Poles, or whatever. Most of them were actually Polish. Their parents were strictly Polish. And I thought at that time, I had a better, we had a better education than what they have today, because they used to drive it in our heads whatever they wanted us to learn, which in my personal opinion, they don't do that in high schools today.
What do you remember doing for a good time while you were growing up? Is there something that, at any age, was there anything that you really remember as having?
Well, the only thing I remember, I went to what we call a Polish Boy Scouts. It was actually American Boy Scouts, but this was in the Polish district. So we studied most of the American Boy Scouts. We studied that in Polish and tried a little bit in English. That's the only good time that I had that I remember.
How about when the war broke out? When can you remember? When did you realize that the United States was going to go to war? One event or one?
The only time I remember it, I didn't follow the European theater too much before Pearl Harbor. The only thing I remember is that I had to go in when World War II started. That was when Pearl Harbor was bombed. And I was in a movie theater. I was an usher. They shut the screen off. I don't remember what the movie was about, but they shut the screen off and announced that Pearl Harbor was bombed. A lot of people and a lot of kids asked, where was Pearl Harbor? Never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard of it because I used to read the paper about it. And that was it. I quit the theater and went home and tried to join the Navy the next day.
What? How about your folks? What did they think of when you said you wanted to go in?
My mother didn't want me to go. My stepfather didn't want me to go. But I demanded that I wanted to go, so they signed up. They signed me up to give me permission that I can go into the Navy.
Was this just on your own, or did you feel like everybody else was doing it?
No, this was all on my own, because I think I was the only one out of the neighborhood that was actually volunteering to go. Most of them waited till they got drafted.
Okay. Trace your movements from basic training, where you were, what you remember most.
I was sorry I went in after the first 2 hours after getting in the Navy, because they gave us, I'll never forget it, they gave us 11 shots, 6 on one arm and 5 on the other. Gave us all of our, what we call sea equipment, which is your hammock, your blankets, your mattress for your hammock, plus your sea bag, all your clothes, and you had to carry it 3 blocks from the dispensary, 3 blocks to the barracks.
Where was this at?
In Great Lakes, Camp Perry. And I remember I had my arms were like this when I was carrying it. I couldn't put my arms on for almost an hour. You know, and the guys helped me put my arms on because they got stiff from the shots. And the first night I heard guys falling off their hammocks because we had hammocks. And knock on wood, I didn't fall out of a hammock once because I really liked it. And the rest, I remember, we only had 4 weeks of training, and there was driving more of recognition of enemy planes and American planes and German planes, German ships, Jap ships, and American ships. That's all the, we only had training of 4 weeks, that's all.
What was a typical day like in that basic training?
Mostly a lot of classes for, like I said, for recognition of enemy planes and stuff. That's all that we didn't have. No marching whatsoever. The only time we marched was on the day of our graduation. That was it.
Were they training you for something in particular, you yourself? Or
no.
It was just,
you know, just regular basic training, regular boot camp.
Why did you pick the Navy? Was there any reason?
I don't know. I just picked it because I live close to Lake Michigan, about a mile and a half from Lake Michigan. You can go 5 minutes on a streetcar, 10 minutes on a streetcar to get there. I don't know, one reason or another, I just picked the Navy. just out of the blue sky. And I never was sorry I did it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, out of boot camp, where did they send you next?
To Bath, Maine, to go on the USS Strong. That was the DD-467. She wasn't commissioned yet. She was just pulled out of the yards. They just got done completing her. And we had to wait a couple more weeks after that to get radar installations put on the ship. And a gun director, which is, well, I'll show you right here, that's the gun director for all five guns. And then we went boarded about 2 weeks later. So I went October 1st. I boarded the ship.
42?
And 42. Okay. October 12th, we went on a shakedown cruise to see what the ship will do on speed, on depth charge explosions, how close we can be to where the depth charges are dropped from the fantail of the ship until they blow up, see if the ship can take it. And gun recourse. And I was, at that time, I was on the depth charges. And I made a little boo-boo. I was supposed to set the depth charge at 150 feet. I set it for 75, and the whole fantail shook when it blew. You know, that was that's a 500-pound TNT full of the on a depth charge. That's the one that rolled off the rack. The side ones were shot off a gun, mm-hmm. what they call a K-gun.
Did you catch act for it?
A little bit. They took me off the depth charges, and then they put me on a 5-inch gun loader. Which I didn't like too well, so they didn't put me on a 40-millimeter mount, and then I didn't care for that either, so they put me on a 20-millimeter, and I stayed on that. That's an Oerlikon gun. We call it a gun, but it's actually a cannon. Mm-hmm.
Okay, while you're out, well, you're in the Atlantic now.
We were, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then what, did you just stay out?
No, we went out, we took a convoy to French Morocco, Africa. That was in November of 42. What I remember of it, there was 64 ships in the convoy. There was only five of our destroyers escorting them. We pulled in with 12 troop ships. None of them were hit, but the rest of them were hit by submarines, you know, tankers, ammo ships. But the troop ships we brought them in. Then we brought the old Arkansas back, the old Arkansas battle wagon. We brought her back from, they must have done a bombardment there for the invasion. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Any action yourself on the way over in that first convoy?
No.
Didn't see anything?
Mm-mm.
Okay, then on the way back, anything?
We lost the convoy four times. We had a bad storm. The waves must have been, my estimation, 40, 50 feet high. And I know I got drowned a couple of times. I mean drenched, not drowned, but drenched. I had to go down below and change them to dry clothes. It makes no difference what you put on, you got soaked. And then we lost the convoy, like I said, for a couple of days, and we gathered them back up after the storm tapered down to nothing.
We lost by yourself, or are you talking about like just...
No, by ourselves. Then we picked the convoy up 2 days later. But there was no damage done or anything.
Okay, then when you came back, pick it up from there.
From there, we come back middle of November, and they tell us we're going someplace south, so we went down the Atlantic, through the Panama Canal, to the Pacific, we went to Hawaii. We picked up a bunch of cruisers, which I thought were the biggest ships in the world. I never saw a cruiser before, or the battle wagon. I saw that, but not the cruiser. And we went with the four cruisers and five destroyers. We stayed in the task force. The task force number was 71.1, I think. Yeah, I think that's what it was, 71.1. That consisted of the USS Helena, USS Memphis, USS Honolulu and USS St. Louis. Of the destroyers was the Macaulay, I forget the number on her. It was ours, the USS Strong, 467,
468 was the USS Taylor. 467 was the USS Chevalier. And I forget the last one. I can't remember the last number, the number of the destroyer. Because there was 5 destroyers and 4 cruisers in our task force.
How long were you in Hawaii then?
We were there 2 days. We shipped out to the Pacific. We went to Noumea, New Caledonia. That island was just captured about a month before. It was under French domination before, and then the Japs took it, and then we took it back. And that was our place to anchor out, you know, and get ammunition, fuel up, and get supplies. That was our advanced base to go to the Guadalcanal.
What about your time in Hawaii? Did you get time to rest up?
Yeah, just the 2 days, that's all. And I went to Honolulu.
What was that like for you coming from Chicago to go to a place? Did it feel like you were...
It didn't bother me at all, but it was hot. That's all I remember, it was hot. That's all I can think of. But I mean, I had a good time there.
Did you get a chance to enjoy it then?
For the 2 days? Yeah.
Okay, what would you consider a typical day on board? For, you know, your...
Paint and chip. Chip and paint, that's all we did, because I was a part of a deck force. And that's all we ever did, was either work on a deck, chipping and painting. And that's it, you start at the bow on the starboard side, you line up on a port side on a bow, and you have to go back to the starboard side and chip and paint again. That, anything to keep you keep you occupied. But the only time that it bothered that when we had either air raid or some ring contact or something like that, then we take off for, you know, just to get them or whatever.
How about the food?
Delicious.
Was it?
I didn't eat, when I got out of the Navy, I didn't have no turkey, no steaks for 3 years after I got out, because that's all they gave us.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was delicious food. You can't beat that.
Were you satisfied with the way the ship was run? Do you think it was well captained?
I was the best captain. I've been under 5 captains on 5 different ships. And that's the only one that I really got to like him just like a father. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a really good skipper. And he's the only one I know of. He had 4 stripes. Usually they have a commander and being a captain of the ship, but he was a 4 stripe. He was a full captain. Is one of the best ones that I remember. His name is Captain Wellings. Now he's a 2-star admiral. I mean, he might be retired now. He was pretty old.
Okay, and next you were at you were on New Caledonia, right?
Yeah. From there we went took 3 Liberty ships full of ammo and supplies to Guadalcanal. Now, I just got in there for the last leg of the invasion. The invasion was over November 28th, I think. We got there November 26th. We brought the ships in. Then we joined the task force again. That's all I can say.
What? I don't remember when that was. When would that have been? Is that the summer of 44?
What, the invasion?
No.
It was invasion of, it was in August of 42.
42, okay.
Yeah. And then it ended November 28th of 42.
Okay. And then where'd you go from there then?
From there we went back to Noumea, New Caledonia. We stayed there for a couple of weeks. Then we formed another task force. We had to go with the 4 cruisers and the other 4 destroyers beside ourselves. We had to go and make a bombardment run on a Jap island. I shouldn't say Jap, I should say Japanese. And Villa La Villa, that's a part of the New Georgia Islands off the Solomons. This was in 1943. We bombed it in April of 43, bombarded it, I should say. And then we bombarded again in May of 43, June of 43. And then the invasion was supposed to start July 5th of 43. We started pre-bombardment at July 4th at 10 minutes to 12 at night. That would be 2330, Navy talk. We were hit by torpedoes exactly 10 minutes to 12. My ship was hit with two torpedoes, one on the starboard side, one on the port side. I don't remember nothing. I was blown off the ship. I woke up. I was on a life raft with nine other fellas on one raft and nine fellas on the other raft. They told me that the ship went down in 7 minutes. We stayed on a life raft. Can we keep on going?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we stayed on a life raft. 5 o'clock in the morning, we saw a black object coming towards us. We thought it was one of our ships coming to rescue us. He put his searchlights on. We know our ships never do that, not in a combat zone. It was a Jap gunboat. It came to strafe us. So they start strafing, and I jumped overboard the first time. My buddy jumped overboard with me. We were on the life raft. They strafed the life raft. They didn't sink it or nothing. And when we come back up, there was nine guys were killed, and nine of us were still survived out of it. So it was up to me to get the dog tags from the dead ones, keep us set, and leave us set with him. And we just let him cast adrift on a life raft. We only kept him, nine in the other life raft. My buddy was hit the second morning by another Jap gunboat, got a hit right in the stomach. He died 3 days after we got picked up. I buried him in Guadalcanal, and I buried him again in Springdale, Pennsylvania. He was from Springdale.
Was that your first confrontation with death? That you hadn't mentioned anything before. Was that your actual first combat?
No, that first combat was a lot comical in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways it wasn't. This is right a month before we got sunk. We had a blip on a radar, on a surface radar, that was at 5 miles away, and we figured it might be a Japanese sub surface. So we got permission from the task force commander to go after it, so we did. We got it within 2 miles. We were gonna use our 5-inch guns. The captain says no, we're gonna get closer. And the sub was still surface. They must have been celebrating the sinking, and that's what we figured anyway. So we got too close to use the 40-millimeter guns. So the captain says, we're going to use the 20s. So we started to use the 20s. He says, no, we're going to ram it. We'll bow first, ram it. So me, like a jerk, I was on a phone because I was on a gun. So I says, what are we going to do? I'm going to say it like I said at that time. I said, what are we going to do? Tie alongside the son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. Captain says, I'll talk to you after a while, Pollock. That's all they used to call me, Pollock. So then after that, we never got the sub. It submerged before we got there. And we threw a couple of depth charges, but we didn't get nothing. And I got 3 days bread and water for that. And that was it.
What was that like being in the water?
Scary. I bawled like a baby because we lost so many guys. Full of oil because there was oil on the water after the ship got hit. Okay, we got on a life raft. We didn't give a hoot. It was still dark. We didn't give a hoot. And I always, I'll be legitimate. Every time before we go into battle stations, general quarters, battle stations, I always fix a pack of this aluminum case, cigarette case. I always put a fresh pack, never open, put it in here, and book matches in here. Every time we went to general quarters, I always did that. I was the only one on board ship that had a pack, on a life raft that had a pack of cigarettes that we could smoke. I looked at it and I said, oh no, it's no good. It's oil's come on the outside. Cigarettes are good. So I shifted around. I only had two cigarettes left. So we smoked it, whether it was dark or not. I think that's what tipped off the Japanese that we were in the water. So that's when they come. But we could, we didn't care because we were dying for cigarettes because you're not allowed to smoke in your general quarters.
Okay, then how did you eventually get, how long were you in the water until you got picked up?
Well, I was on a life raft for 3 days. We got picked up on the, well, on the third morning. It was 3 days and two nights. We got picked up, like 10 minutes to one in the afternoon. I forget the name of the ship. Well, anyway, mm-hmm. one of our destroyers picked us up. And then they took us to Tulagi, which is our island right across from Guadalcanal. That was our Navy base then. And then they picked us nine up. They are on board the ship. I was nervous as heck, shaking. When they picked us up, this number three gun over here, one in the back here, she blew. She had a hank fire. You know, your shells are preset before it shot out. So many seconds to explode. All right, something happened, it wouldn't shoot, so it blew. But none of the guys got hurt. They jumped, the gun crew got out in time. When I heard that, I thought we got hit again. I jumped overboard. Then they fished me out again. Then they picked me up and they told me what it was, and I felt better then. But I was a nervous wreck for, I'd say, about 2 months after.
Did they give you a chance to rest up?
Yeah, they took us to Tulagi. They wanted volunteers to go. Couple of volunteers, so I went because there was nothing wrong with me. So I went on a PT boat, the 703. I was on it for 2 weeks, just normal patrol. And we come back, here the guys were gone. They went on board ship, they were taking them back to the States. Then I started moaning and hollering and all that. The lieutenant says, "Don't worry about it." This lieutenant that was the captain of the PT boat, he said, I'll see what I can do. So he called us Henderson Field and Guadalcanal, and I just happened to get a B-24 Liberator that was going into back to the States. So they let me get on board, and I went there and I beat the guys by a week and a half. And I was waiting for them.
And then what about from there then?
From there, I was stationed in Great Lakes for about a week. From there, they put me to Navy Pier in Chicago. It's right almost in downtown Chicago. I was there for a month, month and a half. I got orders to report on board the USS Laws, the 551. She was in Bremerton, Washington. It's right above Seattle. I went over there, boarded her.
When would this have been?
This was in August, September, in October. October of 43.
Yeah.
And between that time, I was home on survivor's leave for 30 days, mm-hmm. which wasn't counted as leave, you know, by the Navy. And I boarded her, and she was a brand new ship. And we commissioned her, and we took her out for practice and see what shakedown cruise. And then we went out to the Pacific. We went and made the Kwajalein invasion. All the Marshall Islands, the Tinian, Rota, Kwajalein, Saipan, then we had a couple of air raids in between that time, and that's about it.
Any other enemy fire in between that?
Oh yeah, our ship was hit by a bomb from a Jap plane. And we lost 26 guys. We had 315. On this one here, on the USS Strong, there was 312, and there's only 35 of us survived out of it.
And what was the other? Who was the other ship?
USS Laws.
Laws. But that wasn't destroyed. It was just hit.
It wasn't destroyed.
It was
the same kind as this one.
Yeah. But it wasn't destroyed.
Huh?
Was it destroyed?
No.
What did that feel like, being hit the second time? Did you get a flashback?
No, I jumped. They said that we're going to have a possible abandoned ship, so I jumped. And then they fished me out again. They said, we're going to see if maybe it's going to be crippled up too bad, you know. So we went, before that, right at Hawaii, then they transferred me back to the States to go to, you know, be on R&R again, rest of recuperation for 30 days. And that's about it.
Okay, what about from there then?
And from there, I went down to USS Atlanta. I didn't like that too well, so I told them I wanted another ship, so they put me, they took me off of that, and they put me on a USS LST 732, landing ship tanks. From there, I made the Okinawa invasion, April 1945. And I seen a lot of ships being blown up by kamikazes, but we weren't hit. Closest one was 1,500 yards away was a ship with LST that sunk, that was full ammo. And they blew it apart by the kamikaze.
Did you know about that beforehand?
I mean, about the kamikaze?
Yeah, was that a surprise?
We didn't know diddly about that. We didn't know nothing. Just come out of the blue sky. We should have known because they were coming between us when the invasion started in Okinawa. They're coming between us and the troops. And they fly over. And we start shooting at the planes, we'd be getting our own men because they're up ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever the shells hit, they must have hit some of our guys, I don't know. But that was a complete surprise.
How about the invasion? What do you remember about the Okinawa?
That's all. We had to take the stuff out of the tank deck, the ammo and stuff like that. And then we went back. Where the heck did we go? I forget where we went.
Was it easy getting on the beach, or was that?
Oh yeah, yeah. The beach was already secured. You know, I mean, the troops were already a mile and a half in when we come. We were the third wave to come in with ammo and stuff. And the task force, the big ships, the destroyers, the carriers, the cruisers, the battle wagons, they're all within 5-10 miles away from the shore. They were bombarding.
Were they pounding away then?
They were hit too. We lost, I think, I read that in the paper about a year after I got out of the Navy. I think we lost 34 ships. All big ships, capital ships, from destroyers up. And we lost some LSTs, but not a lot. But they don't consider that as a capital ship, you know.
Okay, then on Okinawa, what came next?
Okinawa, then come to, then we were getting ready for invasion of Japan. Then the atomic bomb was dropped at Hiroshima, the first one, and then Nagasaki, and then the war ended. And I was right in Tokyo Bay. I was 2,000 yards away from the battleship Missouri when the surrender was signed.
What do you remember about that? Could you notice anything, or was it just...
Oh, yeah, and a blind man could see that we were ready to really blast that city down to the ground because we had 5,000 planes flying over. They say 15 of them had the atomic bomb. All the guns were aimed at Tokyo. We were anchored. We weren't docked or nothing. We were all anchored out. And you never want to see, you never forget a picture like that, you know. As far as the eye could see, the planes flying over. And there, you know, they were loaded with bombs. We thought maybe it might be another sneak attack or something.
Mm-hmm. Did you have word that the surrender was being signed when it was being signed?
Yeah. Well, they announced it all through the ship. Then see, they broke radio silence then and everything. You know, to announce it that the war is over and it was signed on the Missouri. So we could look with binoculars, you know.
What did you see?
Well, we just saw the group of people at the bow of the battle wagon, that's all. You know, all the sailors are all over the ship, you know, looking out, looking at the surrender being signed. And then from there we took Jap soldiers from Formosa, which is Taiwan now. We took them from Formosa, we took them to Kyushu Island as part of the Japanese mainland. We took them over there. We transported them from Formosa because that was Chinese island. And they didn't want no Japanese on the island, so we transported them over to the Kyushu Island. And that's about it.
And on your way home then after that?
I went from there, then I grabbed another ship on the USS Latimer. as an old APA, as an attack transport, and to decommission it in the States, Baltimore. And that's where we went, and that's where I got out in Baltimore, Maryland.
Did you get discharged right away, or did you have to spend a few days in?
No, I joined up on a minority cruise. In other words, I had served from 17, and I served till I was 21, day before I was 21 years old. That's what they call a minority cruise. So that's when I got out. I got out May 7, 1946.
What did you do in between the time of the surrender, when you got back to Baltimore? Was it just day-to-day work? Or?
It was routine. Then it really got chicken. You had to wear either whites in the Pacific while you're handling the greasy lines and all that. That's why I don't want to join up again. I was thinking about enlisting, but it just got too chicken. You know, I mean, got real regulation where it wasn't like that during the war.
How about when you, at any time, while you were in, did you hear anything from home? You mentioned earlier about hearing from home. In what way did you receive packages or?
Well, we received packages. I can recall one time we were almost fighting against each other on board the first ship I was on. We didn't get no mail whatsoever for 3 months. Then when we got it, the mail clerk, he got disgusted. He was going to dish them out, you know, accordingly. He got disgusted, so he put them all in all the 5 gun mounts, the mail. He said, "You guys go get it yourself." It wound up, I had over 100-something letters, about 5 packages. And that's all we did. But that's 3 months is a long time not to hear from nobody.
What happened?
The mail got screwed up someplace along the line. They fouled it up. And they sent it to Alaska, and then they sent it to Aleutian Islands. And from there, they sent it to, the way I understand, they sent it to New York. From New York, it come back to the Pacific, and then Hawaii finally got it, then we got it.
How did you get the mail, like when you were out at the ocean? How did that?
Well, this picture that I have here, it shows you they're just taking the mail. We took the mail from their ship, we were bringing it into ours. And if we had mail, we'd ship it across the line, you know, while we're still underway. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing when we fueled up. We were fueled up on the way. Every man on the deck force that was out that knew what they were doing, they're supposed to keep an axe right by where the hose is at. Then when we were under Japanese attack or something like that, then we'd have to cut the line, you know, chop the line and let the hose go.
What kind of packages and things did you receive?
I got cookies and from my mother and some from my grandmother, and then I got just that's about it. I mean, most of that was something good to eat, you know. And then the packages used to come in pretty regular, you know. But it didn't take them long after that first follow-up. So within a week you got a package, because you used to fly everything over.
Was there anything that you missed while you were in? Anything that you missed from home, or
no?
Maybe you didn't.
I felt happy, especially on the first ship. I felt happy. I mean, I didn't miss home at all. I could say that. I missed the States, but I didn't miss home. You know, and that's about it. Well, we had a chaplain on board ship. We were lucky. One of the lucky ships. We had a chaplain on board. He happened to be a Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. Nice to see him about every couple of weeks or something. We were fortunate we had a doctor on board our ship too. Because generally it's about every fourth ship has a doctor. The rest are all pharmacist mates.
Did you ever run into anybody that you knew while you were in the Navy, at least by, you know, maybe by accident or?
No. Not even, if I asked anybody if they were from Chicago, they were, and Chicago is 65 square miles, the city is. So it's very rough to see, find somebody.
Was there at any time while you were in? Was there a time for you to maybe forget about what you were there for and have a good time?
No. I know what I was fighting for. In fact, I wanted to go on another destroyer. They wouldn't let me go on another one. They figured, you know, the averages would get me, you know. I'd probably go down with the next one. And that's about it. I mean, I fought for, mostly after this first ship sunk, I really wanted to get at the Japanese, you know. And up till today, I won't buy a Japanese-made car or anything. I still got it in for them. In fact, when after the war was over, sailors, soldiers, Marines, they would fraternize with the Japanese, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm not the only one that did that. I mean, there's a lot of fellows like me that felt the same way.
Were you able to go into Tokyo at all, or?
Yeah, I went in there 2 days after. We had to carry sidearms, just in case, because we still didn't trust them. They didn't trust us. They wouldn't show their faces for a couple of days. So, you know, they just kept themselves inside the houses, and that's all.
What was the city like? Was it pretty well bombed?
You know, half of it was bombed. They made sure that they wouldn't destroy most of the strategic places, like your castle that Emperor Hirohito stayed in. That wasn't bombed at all. And then a couple of churches and stuff like that. But it was, I'd say about 40% of the city was totally bombed, you know. Then I took a ride by a Jeep, and a couple of us went to see Hiroshima, and that was really a wipeout. And I wanted to go see Nagasaki, but we had to go back to the States then.
What do you recall about Hiroshima?
Well, it was flat as a pancake. It was a nice city, the way I understand. It was a beautiful city. It was 180,000 people in it, or something like that. And I heard over 100,000 were killed or burnt, whatever. But it was flatter than the pancake. Just a couple of chimneys were sticking up from industrial places. And that's about it.
Any evidence of death anywhere? Or just
well, whatever, because we got out of there, because there's a lot of dead bodies, but we didn't see them. But they told us we only could go so far. The shore patrol and the Marine MPs, they told us we could only go so close, and that's it, and then we had to turn back. Because that was all cordoned off. What you could see, you know, just a little hill, you could see the way the city was completely wiped out.
Did you keep track of the entire war while you were in? Did you hear anything about what was going on in Europe? Or did you?
Yeah, we were interested in it. We usually had the Stars and Stripes. That was supposed to be actually for the army, but now I think from 1942 they started shipping over that they can have it for the Navy too. So we had the Stars and Stripes in the Navy, and I used to keep up with how the war was going in Europe, and we cheered like crazy and cried like crazy when we heard that. D-Day started June 6th of 44, we heard that, and we all were happy about that. Then when we were really happy when we found out that VE Day was May 8th, and we thought, oh boy, we're going to get relieved because they're going to bring the troops and the ships all in the Pacific, which they didn't do for a good 6 months. So they finally brought some of the ships, but it was already too late. What irked us more was when Russia declared war on Japan exactly 2 days before the surrender was signed. And we thought that was pretty crappy of them. They should have been in there a long time ago. But that's the only thing. But there was never so, we were never so happy when VE Day was, or VJ Day, that's when the war completely ended. And we can have all the lights on board, showing at night, smoke your hind end off anytime you wanted to at night, don't worry about blackouts or whatever, silent running and all that. It was something else. We shot off all the shells and the ammo and everything off the guns. We just fired them off.
Overall, was You think Navy life was good for you?
I liked it. I liked it better than I did the Army, because I went in the Army in 1948. And I just wanted to see what it was like in the Army. And I stayed in the States the whole time. And then I got out in 1950, January. Korean War started June 20th. I was called back June 21st. I was in the reserves. And I was in Korea from October 1950 until July 1951.
What was that like for you?
I was in the combat engineers. Not bad.
Did you, when you went back into the Army, you didn't expect anything in Korea?
No. No. Uh-uh. I stayed in what they call the peacetime army. 48 to 50 was peacetime army. They wanted to cut the army down to 320,000, so they asked me if I wanted to get out. I said, yeah. So I went out and they said, well, you have to join the reserves. I said, okay. So I joined the reserves. That's when President Truman called the reserves in after the Korean War started.
When you got out the first time, what was that like coming home after World War
II? I was lost. I told my wife about it a couple of weeks ago. I had, in 1 week's time, I had 28 jobs. I just couldn't settle in one place. It just got boring. I mean, because you're used to the service, you know. And I got disgusted. In 48, I joined the Army. But I was completely out of my, how would you say? I didn't fit into the civilian life. That's the way I felt, you know. I expected more than what the civilian life would give me. I don't know why, but that's the way I felt.
Did you go back to Chicago after the war?
Yeah.
How'd you end up in Bessemer then?
My wife, she's originally from Bessemer.
Okay. You met your wife in Chicago?
Yeah, I met her in Chicago, and she worked for Motorola Radio and TV. And I met her at a Polish dance in Chicago, the north side of Chicago where I was from. And we got married. And then, like I said, I got the good news to come back in the service on June 22nd, 1950. In October, I was in Korea.
And then after the Korean War, did you move here?
After the Korean War, I moved to Bessemer, yeah.
What were your impressions of the town when you moved in here? Did you like it, or was it just
I didn't care for it because, at that time, I didn't take up fishing, I didn't take up hunting. Until I started doing it when I left here. The first year, I was about ready to go back to Chicago. And then I got the job over here at Bessemer Cement 2 weeks after I got out of the Army. And then I took up fishing, hunting. Now, if I go to Chicago, I'll just go visit for 1 day or 2 days, and that's it. I'm ready. I don't care for big city. I like this city, a town like this.
Anything about the war, what about the that sticks out the most in your mind about the war?
What sticks out the most? Is it the nature of the ship, mm-hmm. The first ship. I was, especially when I couldn't believe that when I woke up, when the ship was hit, I was blown out. I was about 20 feet away from the impact of that torpedo. And it blew me, the way I understand, 30 feet out of the water or off the ship. And then when they picked me up, I woke up. I must have been blown unconscious. That's it. And then I looked around and my ship was gone. So that must have been more than 7-10 minutes I was knocked off.
Okay, anything else you think important to add that we might have missed?
Yes. In 1963. They had this TV program, This Is Your Life. Well, I was watching something else on TV, and then Harvey Grimes called me up from Bessemer. He called me up, because I was still living here. He said, Stanley, your ship's on This Is Your Life. I said, which one? He said, the Strong. So I switched it on to the This Is Your Life, and here they brought out a lieutenant. He was lieutenant, at that time, he was a lieutenant, Hugh Barr Miller from North Carolina. He was directly under the torpedo when it blew, and it blew them 85 feet up in the air, back through the ship, down to the bottom, and he got multiple cuts, bruises. He had his stomach was all goofed up from that, and him and five other fellows went on a life raft, which I must have been on the other side of the ship where we were at. And they went on this Jap Island. We were only 2 miles away from the Jap Island. And he was on the Jap Island for 32 days by himself. He told the fellows to leave. And I understand they survived him. And he stayed by himself for 32 days. He killed 28 Japs by himself by picking up their weapons. He killed the first one. He choked one to death, the way he says. And then this MC says, "You know this voice?" And I picked it up right away. You can ask my wife. I picked it up right away. I said, "That's the goddamn skipper. I thought he went down with the ship." Well, everybody thought he went down, because we never heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was. It was the captain. I wrote him a letter right away. You know, as soon as I found out, I wrote him a letter. And I can't find it now. I'll show it to you. And he answered back. It was a nice letter. And my eyeballs bulged out when I saw he was a two-star admiral, you know. So that was another right thing, because I always thought he went down with the ship. That's him and Chief Radio Man. So they were the last ones to leave the ship.
Anything else?
That's about it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.